It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. As this year draws to a close, Americans are looking forward to 2014, a year in which the United States is scheduled to withdraw its combat forces from Afghanistan, the longest war in U.S. history. But many questions remain about the role the global community and the nation's neighbors will play in the country in the years to come. This week, the University of Pittsburgh's Graduate School of Public and International Affairs is discussing those questions at a conference called Afghanistan, A Regional Way Forward, being held this Thursday and Friday. The keynote address is being given by Peter Thompson, a 1964 Pitt Graduate School of Public and International Affairs graduate who served as President George H.W. Bush's special envoy to the Afghan resistance from 1989 to 1992. Mr. Thompson is also the author of a book called The Wars in Afghanistan, among other books, and he'll be speaking tomorrow morning at a breakfast briefing of the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh at the Rivers Club downtown. He joins us now by phone. Peter Thompson, Mr. Ambassador, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
And you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Peter Thompson, you became a special envoy to the Afghan resistance in 1989. This was just as the Soviet Union's war in Afghanistan was ending. Describe what was going on at that time and what your role was.
Well, my role was to implement American policy, which was to have a political settlement in Afghanistan, elections, and a return to the period, a democratic period, before the Soviets invaded in Afghanistan. There was a decade of democracy. There were elections. It was a constitution based on Western constitutions, including our own. Afghanistan was moving forward. It was self-sufficient in agriculture. Education was on the way up. And this constitutional democracy had been underway, too. But then with the Afghan communist coup in 78 and then the Soviet invasion in 79, Afghanistan plunged into a period of warfare and chaos that has continued to this day. So our approach was to restore that period, but it wasn't until 9/11, the 9/11 attacks, that Afghanistan was able to get back on that track with the American intervention. And there was a constitution that was passed. There have been three elections so far. There's going to be another one in 2014, a year we pull out. So Afghanistan is still struggling, but it's still a victim of the wounds of war, and it's still suffering.
Over the 3 years that you were in Afghanistan, describe the people that you came in contact with and what insights you gained into that very complicated situation there.
Yes, what I found was a tribal society, which is very strange to Americans. It is one where power is dispersed to literally tens of thousands of communities in Afghanistan. The central government has never directly governed these communities, which are self-sufficient, they're armed, and they're led by tribal chiefs and tribal elders. Whose main goal is to take care of the families and clans within their tribe. They're moderate Muslims. They're not radical Muslims. One thing we have to remember is that Afghanistan is just one of several Muslim countries in the world where a battle between moderate Muslims and extremist Muslims is being played out, and how things turn out in Afghanistan is going to have an effect in Syria and Egypt and other parts of the Muslim world.
Was there anything that happened during your time in Afghanistan that indicated to you, and granted this was some 10 years before 9/11, but was there anything that happened while you were there that indicated that we might end up following in the footsteps of the Soviets and fighting a war there?
No, but I did see problems in our foreign policy whereby the Pakistani military and ISI were following a double track. They were saying they were with us in restoring a democratic regime in Afghanistan, but covertly the Pakistani military and their military intelligence organization, the ISI, was arming the jihadist radicals who were associated with Obama. Or sorry, they were associated with extremists on the frontier. And they were building training camps, and they continued the war by the Pakistani military did by pivoting into Afghanistan on the tail of the Soviet withdrawal. And Talibanizing Afghanistan, as you know, in the 1990s, while we weren't looking, Mullah Omar and the Taliban, with Pakistani military support, took over the country. And it was from Afghanistan where where 9/11 was planned, and it was eventually those bombers that attacked Twin Towers in Washington. And were crashed in Pennsylvania. They were all trained in these training camps in Afghanistan. So then we intervened after that. And I think one thing that stands out in my mind is I was with Hamid Karzai in a caravan of cars in Kandahar in 2002 when we got ambushed by the Taliban. And that showed to me and many others that the Taliban were going to stage a comeback after we had defeated the Taliban and drove them into Pakistan. But the Pakistani military revamped and retrained, rearmed the Taliban and sent them back into Afghanistan, and the war has continued ever since.
Some have questioned the wisdom of this war and compared it to Vietnam. We've been in Afghanistan now for over 12 years. As I mentioned, it's the longest war in U.S. history. What would you say that we have accomplished there?
I think we've accomplished a great deal. First, we've defeated the Taliban and al-Qaeda and ended Afghanistan's role as a springboard for international terrorism to strike the United States and other countries. The training camps were pushed out of Afghanistan, and now they're in northern Pakistan, and many of them are protected by the Pakistani military. As I mentioned, we've been able to help the Afghans to install a democratic network in their country, which is working in fits and starts, but they've had it before. They want to return to it, and I think if the war stops, they would do very well in the political and economic areas. But that means that the training camps must be dismantled in Pakistan. And those training camps also produce terrorists that go into other parts of South Asia, including India. And this guy, Faisal Shahzad, who tried to bomb Times Square 2 years ago, his bomb didn't go off, was trained in those training camps. So we're preventing terrorism from reestablishing itself in Afghanistan. We also have done a great deal in many other areas with our coalition partners in education. You know, there's now 7 million kids in school, including 3 million girls, which has never happened in Afghanistan. We've promoted and supported gender reforms. We've also built roads, and there's been a great deal of agricultural progress in Afghanistan. Now is exporting food. They're still riven with war and unable to continue on their own without outside assistance. But their GNP has gone up. There's been progress in economic areas, social areas. So we have to preserve that progress. Also, we owe it to our veterans who were wounded there and those who perished to not bug out, but to persevere through this difficult period, this transition period that's coming out. For a year, as you mentioned, till 2014, when the Afghans are going to be in complete control of their destiny, and they'll have to defend their own country.
Do you think they'll be able to do that?
I think so, because generally speaking, diplomatically in the whole region, not only the United States, but Russia, China, India, also Saudi Arabia suffer from this jihadist terrorism. And they want it to end. There was recently a meeting in New Delhi between the Russian, Chinese, and Indian foreign ministers where they denounced the terrorism that's riveting the region. That was a good step, and it's a message to Pakistan and the Pakistani military that they have to shift away from this support of radical jihadists as a foreign policy tool.
Our guest is Peter Thompson, who served as President George H.W. Bush's special envoy to the Afghan resistance from 1989 to 1992. He's speaking in Pittsburgh at two different places later this week, and we'll run that down for you before we finish. But some questions remain. Mr. Ambassador, back in 2001, the U.S. strongly backed Hamid Karzai as the best man to rebuild Afghanistan after the Taliban had been driven out of power. Yet today, the Afghan president is a source of endless frustration for the Americans. John Podesta, who's an advisor to the Obama administration on Afghanistan, was quoted in an NPR story as saying, quote, Karzai has really gone from maddeningly unpredictable to dangerously erratic, end quote. Mr. Ambassador, can we trust Hamid Karzai?
Well, we don't have to. That would be the way I'd answer that. As I mentioned, the central government is not strong in Afghanistan. It's always had to have an arrangement with the regions to run the country, but they've never directly governed the regions. Some people have called him the mayor of Kabul, but he does have that bully pulpit, and he does have to sign international agreements. But there's elections next year that are coming up in April. It's not too far away, and I think he's maneuvering to try to influence the elections, and he's trying to protect his own legacy as much as he can. He's erratic, and sometimes he gets into this anti-American mode, but he's above all a Democrat with a small D, and he is not an extremist. He's an Afghan moderate. So his tribe is not that large. He doesn't have that much of a domestic base. He got his position with American support, but now his term is finishing, and we're going to have a different leadership within 6 months in Afghanistan.
The U.S. wants to nail down a deal that would allow perhaps as many as 10,000 troops to remain in Afghanistan after the U.S. withdraws its combat forces by the end of next year, but Karzai has reportedly put such a deal in doubt. Are we in danger of seeing a repeat of what happened when we departed Iraq? No security deal was reached, the American forces left, and now we're seeing widespread violence there.
Well, the violence has continued because of the war, and it emanates from Pakistan, where the training camps are and where the Taliban come in from. But in terms of the bilateral security agreement, I think the Afghan side is the one that has to figure that out. Our ambassador 2 days ago said that we're ready to sign. If it's not signed now, it's your fault, and we want it signed before the end of December. But we shouldn't try to pressure them too much because they react adversely to outside pressure. They're very independent-minded. I think we should just let them work this out. They will work it out. It might be before the election. It might not be. It's just hard to predict. It's an unpredictable country in that respect in terms of their internal politics. But again, the moderate impulse in Afghanistan has been in the ascendancy since we went in the intervention after 9/11. It's still the strongest. Taliban are very unpopular in the country. And I believe that they will work things out. They have a military now that's actually security forces, police and military, numbers 350,000, which we're supporting. I think they'll be able to defend their own country. But this is a political issue, basically, that Karzai's trying to manipulate, but he can't manipulate it forever.
Right, and he's upset, reportedly. One of the things that's put the deal in doubt with an agreement to keep troops in Afghanistan is that Mr. Karzai is upset about ground raids on Afghan homes. And just last week on Thanksgiving, in fact, he was upset about a drone strike that he said happened in southern Afghanistan that killed a child and wounded a couple of women. And he's using that as one of the reasons that he won't sign the security agreement. He says, until the raids stop, I'm not going to enter into any kind of an agreement.
Yeah, of course, his position is not a very good one, because if you have a war, you're going to have civilian casualties. You can't stop it. However, as I mentioned before, it's a decentralized country. It's very agricultural. Most of the people live in 40,000 communities around the country. And when you have drone strikes or raids by special forces that are not based on good intelligence and result in civilian casualties, which occurs always in any conflict, you have these types of things, as I mentioned, occur, unfortunately. But when that happens, the communities in a tribal culture, as a tribe, they turn against the government and they turn against the United States. So it is something to be concerned about. In my judgment, we should have done better in organizing these raids and making sure that this collateral damage was not too heavy. Karzai is exploiting that, but it's something we have to give more attention to too.
So the U.S. military, which still has 50,000 troops in Afghanistan, is planning its role after most of the forces are withdrawn next year. What do you see their role being?
Well, they will be under 10,000, and their main role will be counterterrorism and training of the Afghan military force. We've been training their army, their police. But our personnel and the number of coalition personnel, you know, there's about 40 countries that are cooperating with us militarily on this. They'll go way down, those numbers, and we'll probably just be at the provincial level and at the military bases training and helping to equip Afghan forces to defend their country. But it's going to be a supporting role. We're not going to be the supported side. We've already turned over all of the combat operations in the provinces, 34 provinces, to the Afghan military and police. So we're going to continue to downsize, and we're going to go down to under 10,000 U.S. troops. But this counterterrorist operation is very important. You know, the attack in Abbottabad against bin Laden was mounted from Jalalabad, which is in Afghanistan. And I can tell you, you could see it in the movies too, that the SEALs were very happy when we crossed, when they crossed the Pakistan border in the air into Afghan airspace and landed at Jalalabad, because we need these bases inside Afghanistan to strike at terrorist bases in the region.
Where does the Taliban come into play in all this? We've negotiated with them. How would you characterize the talks that have happened with the Taliban in Afghanistan? And what do you see the Taliban doing after, you know, the bulk of our forces leave?
That's a very good question. You know, there's different levels of Taliban. There's the ones that are in Pakistan, especially the Quetta Shura, which leads the Taliban, who really are under the thumb of the Pakistani military intelligence and the Pakistani army, because they're in Pakistan. Their relatives, their families are in Pakistan, and they have to respond to Pakistani guidance, and the Pakistani military wants to re-Talibanize still Afghanistan, and so that leadership will continue to follow that course. However, when you get inside Afghanistan, especially at the lower village level, the fighters and the middle level Taliban, they are very, very susceptible to going over to the government in negotiations. And that group is the great majority of the Taliban. So I suspect that over time that there's going to be more and more negotiations with the Taliban, but it won't get very far with the Quetta Shura that's based in Pakistan. The deputy head of the Taliban, his name is Baradar. He was having secret talks with Karzai. They're both from the same Popalzai tribe. And the ISI discovered this, and they arrested this guy, Baradar, and he's been in their custody, including now, up till today, because he had gone off the farm, and he was negotiating with the Afghan government. Now, slowly, they're starting to release him, and if they let him leave the country, I believe that there will be even more progress in the talks. But as long as there is a leadership of the Taliban is in Pakistan, the training camps are there, I believe there won't be major progress in talks with the Taliban.
Our guest has been Peter Thompson. He is a 1964 Pitt Graduate School of Public and International Affairs graduate who served as President George H.W. Bush's special envoy to the Afghan resistance from 1989 to 1992. Among his books, he is author of The Wars in Afghanistan, and he is in Pittsburgh speaking this week as part of the conference called Afghanistan, A Regional Way Forward, being held this Thursday and Friday. And he's speaking tomorrow morning at a breakfast briefing of the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh at the Rivers Club downtown. Certainly a busy man. Mr. Ambassador, we thank you for taking the time to be with us here today on Essential Pittsburgh and providing your insights.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Coming up, author David Laskin talks about his book, The Family, Three Journeys into the Heart of the 20th Century. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.